Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. Today on the podcast, we are talking with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber about USC summer workouts. They've continued on. They've had three workouts so far. We usually talk to Dan. We talked to Dan last week on a Tuesday. But, of course, if you check out the Peristyle Podcast, we had T. Martin on this week. So, again, the format's a little bit different. We had Coach Harvey Hyde on Monday for a shorter show. T. Martin, really good podcast. Check that one out on USCFootball.com. On Tuesday, and then today, Dan Weber, we're going to talk about summer workouts, answer some questions. We do love to hear from you, so send in your questions. Let us know who the question is for. podcast@uscfootball.com is the email address. You can voicemail us at 206-888-6755, or go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. Click on the left side of the page, and you can leave a voicemail right from your computer. All right, let's bring in Dan Weber. What's up, Dan? How you doing?
Hey, doing good. Doing good. Enjoy it.
Yeah, so I wanted to. We got some questions, but I wanted to talk about the summer workouts a little bit. We got to see the third player run practice, is what they like to call them, and a couple new faces. We got to see Emon Marshall, who we hadn't seen before, at least at these USC workouts, and Cedric Ware was out there as well, getting some carries in. And we haven't seen a lot of Trey Madden, but he got some work in as well. So maybe Ware didn't get as many carries as you would think, but because Madden kind of inserted himself, I think, really for the first time in quite a while.
Yeah, and it's not where they're going to do a lot. The running stuff they're doing is mostly, it's not, you wouldn't call it walkthrough. It's what they call that, their pre-practice kind of thing, where, it's just getting down the steps and the timing and what have you, because it's just not geared, the throwing sessions aren't exactly geared, but it is great to see Trey stepping back in there. And Aka Cedric is a physical and pretty dynamic athlete when you see him in person. Really nice size, and thought he didn't look like a freshman, looked like he was kind of, as we've seen him at the top level in Texas high school football, at the level that team has played at, he's a kid looked, very comfortable being there.
The as far as the team and what they have to do during these off-season workouts, you talk about like the comfortability. I think now that they have these organized stretching beforehand, it seems like it's a little more organized, even though it was well organized last year. What have you seen a difference between this year and last year now that they have strength coaches out there kind of working on things?
Well, I do think it looks a little more official. It just looks, you don't have to have Cody, for example, and, the other guys that are, kind of becoming the, Max Turk, the team leader kind of guys, don't have to round everybody up, and get that official kind of start. And then I think they go from, the warm-up sessions and the, loosening-up sessions to 7-on-7 and all the other stuff that they do more smoothly, although some of that's probably just a result of, they did it last year. They had to work hard last year to get in all those plays in the amount of time that they had. This year, I think they're getting in as many the same plays, same number of plays, only it just doesn't look like they're having to try so hard. They just look much more, as you would expect, much more able, to run, the up-tempo stuff without looking like they're working real hard. The answer was just so obvious that they were trying so hard to get all those plays in and to get it done. This year, it looks very natural, and that's a difference. It's just much more, accustomed to going at that high pace and, doing all the things they're doing, having them signal in from the sideline and all the other stuff that they're doing that they don't have to think about now. and which would be a good sign that instead of, you know, getting into the season and then maybe having to gear things back, this might be with the numbers and with the familiarity with it and with the coaches understanding, you know, the players and all that, if they can go into a game and not have to think, gosh, we get to the second half, maybe we better dial it back or whatever. You know, I mean, I think last year you saw it in the Fresno State game and you saw it in the Notre Dame game. And then, you know, otherwise you didn't always see that up-tempo that went, you know, through the game. And I think that you're seeing that in the summer.
The summer, we're talking about the players, the player-run practices, because we can see those. But also 4 days a week, they're working out on the field and in the weight room with the strength and conditioning coaches. And you had a nice piece about Ivan Lewis, and people can check that out on uscfootball.com. But Tarek wants to know, have you noticed that any of these guys got bigger this offseason? So, it's we look at the practices, that's what we can watch, but they're actually, you know, working, trying to build their bodies up for fall camp too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one that jumped out at me is Max Turk. Just, you know, now we know how hard he worked to, you know, probably keep at 285, and, you know, now we know he looks like a senior. He looks like an All-American. He's got that, you know, he always had a great set of legs, but he's 6'6", and with that long frame, takes a little bit longer maybe, but and I know he got on that 12,000 calorie a day diet, but his upper body just looks great. I just think he looks like he's got, you know, the big arms and shoulders and that we maybe hadn't seen before. I would say Anthony Sorrell, and we can't, you know, we don't get to talk to him, so we can't ask him how much they weigh. He looks significantly thicker. He looks more like a middle linebacker now. So I have to guess he's, you know, certainly closer to 230 than 220, maybe, you know, more than that. But he looks like he's put on some significant weight. Trying to think who else would be just real obvious. I think Quentin Powell is a little bigger, and it's not, you know, probably ever going to come easy for him to put on weight. But anything he does put on is fine. I think.
Jabari Ruffin, I think, looks a little bigger. I don't know.
He looks different. He had gotten there, I think, last year. He had gotten to 240 last year when he wasn't able to play. But I think he was really hitting the weights. His upper body, you know, shows a lot. Some of the younger guys, let's see, who would be the real Connor Spears is a guy, and he doesn't even look, he's 6'6", and I think 252, but he's probably put on 20 pounds since he's gotten to USC, and he really looks like a natural big-time tight end at this point. Had a great, and it probably needs to be at least at that weight to be effective, but he's a guy that just very quietly has, you know, done what he's done, but he looks awfully good. I think anybody on I think we have as many guys probably have gone the other way. Kenny Bigelow at 285 looks trim and about as good as we see. We always thought he looked really good. Well, I think he looks even, you know, better at 285. Defensively,
Scott Starr, I think, looks good. Like.
Oh, yeah, he does.
I mean, Scott Felix, really sorry. Does. Scott Felix.
Yeah, Scott Felix.
Yeah.
In the secondary, I don't know that I've seen anybody that just jumps out at you that's gotten bigger. Sue Cravens probably, you know, went down to 210 or so and says he wants to play at 225, so we'll keep an eye on that. Anybody else that is real obvious? I think Miller, you like the way that, you know, say a Damian Mama comes in at 40 pounds down, and you realize, again, how really big he is and yet how much more able he is to move his body. I think Vianney Talamavayo looks like he's down probably 20 from his top weight. I think Jordan Simmons looks like he's got himself going in the right direction. if there's anybody else that just jumps out. See, I think it's more not so much just the amount of weight; it's the way they look. I just think they're more. You see more guys that are cut, defined. It's just a natural kind of maturing process, I would think. And this was a young team, so they're gonna look. They're just gonna look like they're growing up, growing into their bodies. And so, I think I don't think this was a team that really needed, at a lot of places, to put on a lot of weight. I don't think that's the focus so much. I mean, it is for the few. And, you know, they are doing a much better job with individualized nutrition programs that, you know, Becky Twombly, you know, puts together for them, and having people there, you know, early in the morning so they can, you know, eat before they, you know, or at least get some nutrition in them before they lift, and then that they have breakfast ready for them as soon as they come off the field from the 6 o'clock workout, and breakfast ready for the guys in the 8 o'clock workout, so that they make sure that they eat before they go to class. I think that's a big change that we're seeing, and I think that's paying off. But it's not a case of they had all these guys that really needed to put on weight. They're plenty big enough, and they're really tall. I mean, when those linemen get together, kind of huddle up, you realize how many, I think I said the other day, they have 16 guys that are 6'5 or bigger on this roster, which is, they're pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you got the 6'6", 6'7", 6'9", this is a team that I know Sark has always talked about getting those rangy bodies, and then you have another guy, you know, show up like Imon Marshall the other night, and he's, six, you know, pushing 6'2", and 200 pounds, and that's the kind of a look you like if the kids are athletic enough, and you know, we're getting to see that. They've got pretty many athletes.
So you mentioned Imon Marshall. We talked about him. When you look at the overall team, it just seems depth is a lot better. There's more players coming in. We still haven't even seen all the freshmen yet. It seems like a lot different of a roster just looking at it now compared to last summer. Has any of the newcomers kind of stood out to you? I know Deontay Burnett, who's the blue shirt. He's made some cool plays. Caleb Wilson, who's a walk-on, his, you know, the son of the defensive line coach, I thought has played really well, making some crazy catches. But anyone stood out to you from that group?
Well, I mean, I do think Caleb is the maybe the surprise of the summer, because he was a kid that was a basketball player and split his time with tight end and quarterback. And I think he made an athletic leaping catch the other day that you thought, okay, maybe USC's lost one tight end, but this is a kid that might be able to, you know, to compete for those kind of jump balls and, you know, catching the ball in a crowd. I was really impressed with him. I think Yakeli Ross doesn't look like a freshman. Physically, you know, talent-wise, it'll be interesting to see. Can he and Biggie and Marshall, can both of them step in and give him, you know, starters or starter play? And allow, for example, Dory to go to offense. I mean, that's just one of the kind of things that's a byproduct of depth. Is if you've got enough guys that you can say, you know, we're really, really gonna, you know, give Dory a chance to, you know, 25 plays on offense a game, something like that. That really puts some pressure on opponents' defenses, I think, and you can kind of, you know, spot Adoree on offense and situationally play him and all of that kind of thing. But you do get the sense that there's not that feeling of, do we have enough guys? How do we make the game short enough so that we don't have players that are too tired at the very end and all that? I think that just that psychological edge that having enough players is something you haven't had, you know, for 3 years, and the coaches have had to think about. If you can not have to think about that and not have to think, oh, we've got to change our game plan in the second half, and you're seeing that already. I mean, I was thinking that even without counting any of the incoming freshmen, you know, and this is, you know, the best freshman class in the country, without having to consider any of those players, they had more depth than we've seen. And so you're in a situation now where you only have to go with the incoming freshmen who just demand time on the field. So the guys who really are good enough and really are ready enough will get out there, but you don't have to rush anybody out there. None of the linemen, for example, I don't think any of them are going to have to play. And that's wonderful, you know, situation, you know, for linemen. Now, if some of them are ready, I think they'll get a chance. I think Sark, one of the best things he's done is be able to incorporate, you know, the young guys and get them on the field. But there's no sense of you've got to do that now. And that's different.
Let's go to some of these questions, Dan. Here's a voicemail one for you. Play it. Here you go.
Salma Hamuku deserves to be in the tailback rotation. We should stop calling him a fullback. He is the last tailback recruited by Pete Carroll. We just made the mistake under the Kiffin era to put him at fullback. As a redshirt freshman, he was faster than all the tailbacks. All this is documented at ESPN. How can a person this talented, this powerful, at 270 and fast, not be in the tailback rotation? You don't use fullbacks. Wake up, Sark. Wake up, people in the news.
Yeah, I do think Sema will be in there. I think he'll be at 255 would be my guess. I think once he realized in the spring that he could be in that rotation, that 255 would probably be where he would need to be. And we're, you know, we can expect, I think, to have a big tailback in that rotation. I think Trey Mann, if he plays at, you know, like 223 or something like that, will be maybe the midsize guy. And then Justin Davis, who continues to impress. I think he just looks naturally quicker, more explosive, and more just comfortable out there. And, you know, again, they don't run the ball that much in the summer, and it doesn't really show up because they're not in pads. So exactly what they're doing. But he jumps out at you as a guy who's made some real progress. And not that he, you know, hadn't shown lots of flashes the first 2 years. But I think, you know, those three in a rotation, I don't know if it'll be, you know, I think people say, well, who's going to be the starter or whatever. I think it'll be, you know, to some extent situational. And I think you have to go into the year with three. And I think, Pinner, I think, is again, you're right about no fullbacks pretty much. So I think you can count on him as a big tailback, and a guy can catch the ball. And then you've got the freshmen. And I just don't think we have any idea how those guys are going to play out, and you know what role you're going to have. You know, are they going to be more catch it with Ronald Jones and Dominic Davis, more catching the ball in the flat, just trying to create space for guys with their speed. Aka Cedric certainly looks got a very much of a similar physique to Justin, and kind of a similar skill set, although maybe a little bit more of a pounder, but I think, you know, just the very fact that there will be a nice rotation is a good thing. I'm not, you know, probably so much worried about exactly how the rotation is going to go, you know, 1-2-3. But I think someone will certainly be in the rotation, and be nice if they get enough plays to get enough, you know, carries for those guys. I think that's one of the things you would hope would argue for. Playing the hurry-up style, running a lot of plays, and being able to get carries for all those guys.
All right, let's see. Let's move on. We're going to talk with Cedric from Texas. He says, I love the work that you and your team do. As a recent USC student and band member and huge football fan, I always look forward to the coverage in the podcast. Well, thanks, Cedric. The question is for you and Dan. We've been over the job Sark, Wilcox, and Helton have done. But how have the other position coaches, like Sermon, Hayward, and Nansen, how about the other position coaches like Peter Sermon, Keith Hayward, and Johnny Nansen? It's hard to judge off one season, but how do you assess the coaching, player development, and improvement or lack of at those positions? Also, in my opinion, it's been worth having a secondary coach as one of the limited number of assistants. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think having a secondary coach mattered, and not having one the years that they didn't have one, I think was a limiting factor. I think last year it would be hard to judge them because, they were just, for so many of them, six of them, I guess, it was a whole, not only was new being at USC, and the challenges of recruiting for USC are different, certainly from, say, at Washington. But then there was the whole issue of the limited scholarships, and it was something that they hadn't, these guys hadn't ever, as much as Sark had been at USC, you hadn't ever had to coach a year with the limited scholarships. So I thought that added an extra layer of degree of difficulty to the coaching last year, and figuring out how do you practice with those guys and how hard can you go. And I think they're very aware of how many reps guys get. And I do think one of the things that they probably do a little differently, whether they'll absolutely just come right out and say that, is that some of the game planning where, they basically, this was one of the best teams in the country in the first half. And second half was a different story. And whether, how much you could attribute that to, game planning, where they decided, we got to, run the clock and run the ball, try to slow things down, hopefully get through to the end of the game. And a couple of times they couldn't quite make it. Should they have basically kept the, pedal to the metal and just seen how far, the non-rotating players could go just on based on talent and, get the kind of lead where you weren't going to give it up. I think that's the learning curve we're looking at with this coaching staff. And they're saying the right things. And we want to see, I think, as to, how well do they pick up on what they what they've observed, what they know about these players, what they know about, the schedule and the way it breaks down and all the various challenges. I know, there was a challenge of keeping up with the guys the year before. For example, Tommy Robinson was just a sensational running backs coach. His 1 year at USC, you just couldn't have done a better job, than he did. And so, the challenge is out there for them to, match up. I think, Mike Eckler did a great job as a linebackers coach. So I think it takes a year for us to really evaluate them. But I think this will be a year where they can all, we'll be able to tell if they're all on the same page. And if everybody seems to, and we got another new one to evaluate, Coach Conley, the offensive line coach, he's gotten off to a good start. He's a kind of a down-home guy. I think the younger players, which is an awful lot of the offensive line, can identify with him. He's a college guy, a lifer, I think as a college coach pretty much, and maybe able to talk, in the language that those guys can understand. But even for us, if you go to practice, it isn't always that easy to know for sure who's doing what. I mean, we know, for example, Clay Helton really takes over the offense in practice. I mean, there's no question about it. Who's running, practice from the offensive side of the ball on the field. How that plays out in games, it's not been as absolutely clear. I know that, Sark's made it clear he wants to be, the play caller, and there is always some, controversy over exactly what that entails and what that should entail. And a lot of that is from Lane, left over from Lane. But I think trying to come up with that absolute evaluation and individual positions year one might be maybe more than you want to try to do. But this year, I think, is the year to really be able to evaluate every single one of the position groups and the, you know, position group coaches.
Let's go. Excuse me. Sorry about that. A little clear the throat in the morning. Earl in West LA had a question. He said, over the past few years, I have heard and read a lot of criticism of Pat Hayden's leadership of USC Athletics. Admittedly, the criticism has largely been football-related. However, it seems to me he's doing an amazing job with multiple teams competing for national championships every year. He has hired terrific coaches for women's basketball, soccer, baseball, and track and field. Lacrosse has made the national tournament in each of its first 2 years. Sand volleyball won the 2015 national championship in their second year of existence, and baseball is once again a national presence. In addition, golf, water polo, volleyball, and tennis seem to compete for national championships every year. I was wondering if Dan knows how this record compares to Jess Hill's first 5 years as athletic director, Earl in West LA.
No, it's way better than Jess Hill and sand volleyball. They were terrible in sand volleyball back then. Can you imagine if they'd have tried to trot out a sand volleyball team back in the 30s? They did a lot of, you know, groundbreaking stuff, though, back there, and USC was never afraid to do some of that. I think the thing with Pat, I think he'll you just, you know, don't want to do anything in terms of those sports that you cited. USC really ought to be good. I mean, it's hard to compete numbers-wise in baseball and track and field just because of the severe limitations on scholarships and what it costs, you know, the cost of attendance at USC, which is, you know, certainly, well, double that at UCLA, or when USC goes into a dual track meet against UCLA. And it was probably one of the most exciting single sports events of the year. You know, UCLA looks like they've got twice as many athletes because it's a whole lot cheaper to walk on at UCLA than it is at USC. So you've got to do everything right, recruiting and the makeup of your squad in sports like baseball and track and field. And they've done that. I mean, I just think Dan Hubbs in baseball and Carol Smith Gilbert has just been sensational in what she's done in 2 years in track and field. It's just been, you just can't ask for any more than that. And USC ought to be darn competitive in the volleyballs and the, golf and tennis and what have you. You know, if you can't compete in those sports at USC, probably you're doing something wrong. I think you get evaluated, though, as an athletic director, from the two big sports, and that's football and men's basketball. Until, you know, a lesser extent, women's basketball. I think those are still, to some extent, to be determined. I mean, in men's basketball, I've always thought it's a sleeping giant. Here in L.A., you've got, you know, as good of and maybe the best high school recruiting, field in the country. You've got a new place to play, you're the only college basketball program that's located a mile and a half from two NBA teams. I mean, the exposure is unparalleled. I mean, they used to, when the years with O.J. Mayo going against Kevin Love from UCLA, you would see 25 NBA scouts there on every weekend game. And I think they've got a lot going for them in basketball. And I think Tim, Floyd, had it going in the right direction and, had the potential to be that kind of a program. I think they've got to get basketball there, women's basketball, a lot of turnover with kids leaving this year. We'll see where that goes. That's still, there's still a, we don't know. I mean, we don't know how that's going to go. And with football, I mean, I think everybody in the country essentially says USC is absolutely one of the top four coaching jobs in America in college football. I don't think there's any, with history and location and tradition, all the other stuff that you got going for you. And I think at USC, you basically have to, the guy you hire has to, become one of those coaches, one of those top four or five coaches, Urban Meyer and, Nick Saban and whoever's at USC ought to be in the same conversation. And so those are, I think, still to be determined. But But there are a lot of ways that, you know, USC's done an awfully lot of good things in their, you know, athletic program recently. But if you look at the history, I mean, they've been, I mean, they're the greatest college baseball program in history. USC has the greatest track and field program in history, and their, you know, record in things like you know, tennis and golf and volleyball and all that, you know, probably you know, compare, and certainly with you know, water polo, you know, compare with anybody. So you know, there's some maintenance and some where you really got to hit it out of the park in terms of you know, the big you know, the big money sports.
Well, one last one for you, Dan. It's from Mark. He says, what's happening with the Coliseum renovation plans, and how might USC participate in the new soccer stadium at the site of the sports arena?
Well, I think that's a real interesting question, and it's one we've got to find out about, because the, you know, the way we understand, you know, the lease and that USC has control of all that property, and yet the soccer team in their announcement for, you know, for the new stadium and all that, it made it sound like that they were pretty much going to be in charge of the stadium, that it was going to be, you know, their sole undertaking and responsibility. And how that works out for USC, I don't think we know yet. I think one of the things that's happening with the whole Coliseum renovation and all of that is that you've got the potential for some NFL teams, you know, a couple of NFL teams to come in here. And they're going to need a place to play at least for a year before whatever stadium project really gets underway. And they're still jockeying around, you know, what are they going to do in San Diego? Are they going to come up with a stadium, or are they coming here? What are they going to do in Oakland? It doesn't look like there's any possible way that they can put together a stadium project in Oakland. But, you know, the question with Oakland is, you know, do you want Oakland coming back to the Raiders and the Davis family? Then you got, you know, the Kroenke, you know, family and the Rams to return. That one you would certainly think is going to happen. But however that happens, it certainly looks like the NFL wants it. And at least one of those teams, and maybe two, are going to want it. And I think we would have expected that USC maybe would have made some announcements about exactly how they're going to go forward in renovating the Coliseum by now. Why they haven't, if I had to guess, it's because of the wild card of the NFL coming back. And that might change because it's going to take over two football seasons to really redo the Coliseum the way they want to do it. But if you're going to have an NFL team, I can't even imagine, could you possibly have two NFL teams playing in there and alternating on Sundays with USC on Saturdays? I don't know. But that may change the nature of the renovations. You know, do you put in things that the NFL team pays for? You know, do you change, do you get some, you know, a separate building for private boxes and maybe a new press box or something like that? Does that go up, you know, so that it can accommodate both the NFL in the short run and USC in the long run? I think that will take some more, you know, design, you know, savvy in terms of doing something that works for both and something that maybe the NFL, you know, teams can help pay for. So that's my guess, is that the renovation is kind of waiting and seeing. I know, you know, for example, the Chargers owners were seen coming out of, you know, Pat Hayden's office one day, and they certainly have been doing, you know, they certainly have been talking. And so basically you're waiting on seeing what the NFL is going to do. And as anybody that's in LA has been familiar with how that process has gone, you don't want to put too much on the line, you know, for the, you know, the NFL is coming, because obviously they'll use, teams will use LA and the potential of going to L.A. as a way to get a better deal in their own town.
Right.
So, you know, so I think, is it a waiting game? I think to some extent it's a waiting game. It's, to some extent it's worth waiting for if you can get an NFL team to pay for some of the early, you know, renovations in the Coliseum. But you don't want it to screw up the potential of redoing the Coliseum in the right way. So I would say there's one of the challenges, I think, to being the AD at USC that you'll be able to measure, you know, Pat Hayden's tenure by is how they pull that off. And it's the thing that Pat has said has kept him wanting to stay, you know, for maybe the last couple of years of his tenure, is to get that right, to get it financed and to get it, you know, get it on its way. And it's a big deal for USC football, no question about it.
All right. Well, Dan, great stuff. Thanks for coming on our Wednesday show. And we'll see you out there at the next workout. And, of course, we'll talk to you on the podcast again next week.
Yeah, sounds great. And keep those questions coming.
Yeah, send them in. We'd love to hear from you. And but thanks to you, Dan. And thanks, everyone else, for listening. You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. And we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.